Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, and we are very pleased to have an expert with us to be able to talk to someone that knows a little something about this particular thing that we are going through right now. And we welcome in Dr. Nick Verma. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And as David told you, Dr. Verma, orthopedic sports surgeon, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush. Good morning, Dr. Verma. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Morning, Nick.
Morning.
You know, just want to say that first of all, you know, we appreciate everything everybody in the medical profession is doing for all of us. And I think that people have always had great respect for doctors, for surgeons, for physicians, for nurses, for healthcare workers. But it's really moving to see some of the responses and the applause and the cheers that you hear from cities around the world for everything that's being done. So thank you for being in the profession and all of your colleagues and everyone that that you associate with. Let's start with that.
Well, we appreciate it, guys, and it certainly, you know, makes us all feel really warm inside when we hear those types of comments. And I can say, as an orthopedic surgeon, there are certainly other healthcare professionals that are doing much more than me, but I know I feel very proud of being affiliated with Rush and seeing the way that they're leading the response here in Chicago.
So it's a broad question, but when we talk about this in the sports context, which is what we're doing here at a Sports Talk Radio show, and we're talking about teams and leagues coming back to action, whether it's Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, which still have seasons to complete, even football has been discussed about pushing back the start time of college and the NFL. What is the most important thing to remember, and when you see these things being discussed, what is something that you may, it always comes to mind that, okay, you need to know this to understand why this timetable does or doesn't make sense?
Well, I think it's not really all that different than all of the things you're hearing on the media about when can we open our restaurants and when can we all go back to work and stop working from home? When can we send our kids back to school? And it really depends on three major things, which is player safety, safety of the fans, and safety of our club staffs. You know, everybody who's involved in organized sports in making a team and a season go. And I think until we have some clarity regarding the depth of the disease, the time frame of the disease, when we start seeing the backside of the curve, and then how do we formulate appropriate mitigation efforts so that we can identify cases and sequester or quarantine cases so that we can have people together in formats that could be anywhere from, you know, a baseball locker room. You've got 100 guys going in and out of there. Maybe a basketball locker room a little bit less, a football locker room certainly more. So it starts with that to even get a game going before you start putting fans in the seats.
It's really interesting as you look around the country and you see different people trying to do their part. I saw Peter Gammons tweeted this morning that Robert Kraft sent the Patriots airplane to get 1.2 million masks from China for healthcare workers. And that is a wonderful thing for him to do. But there seems to be a ton of confusion regarding masks. And, you know, I have one medical mask. It's just something they gave me when I went last time to the doctor's office. I use that. I use a couple of ski masks. I mean, I see people trying to wrap a bandana. Does it make sense for people to take those kind of precautions? Do you think it makes it helps in any way? Maybe even we don't know who has it or who doesn't. Maybe prevent the spreading of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, my interpretation of the situation right now is that what government and other decision makers and policy makers and health experts are trying to do is to make sure that at this moment right now, there are enough supplies to go to the front lines. That is healthcare workers and those who are clearly interacting with positive patients on a day in and day out basis. I think once we get through this acute peak phase and we start moving back to some degree of normalcy, I think you may see some recommendations regarding the use of masks, healthcare environments, people who are at-risk populations, either elderly or with comorbidities. So I do think that that will probably become a more formal recommendation, but I think right now the key is to make sure that those who need it have the protective supplies that that are in scarce supply right now.
Nick, you deal with the White Sox and the Bulls primarily, and I just wondered if you've heard from anybody associated with those teams, or you, when you look out at the landscape of professional athletes, if you anticipate having questions like concerns about, you know, how close in proximity you should get to teammates, or even just in the spirit of the competition, you're going to be interacting and being close to players you're either guarding or playing against. And if you anticipate that being one of those more common questions you're going to have to answer in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, so we certainly are in constant contact. As you know, the baseball season stopped abruptly in the middle of spring training. And so there are really a couple levels of things that are going on. Number one, on the team level and from a training staff and medical staff, we have worked and have put in place protocols regarding how do we keep in touch with players, how do we continue to communicate regarding issues. Some of the guys left with ongoing issues. Some of the guys may develop issues moving forward. There was, of course, all the planning regarding how do you maintain some type of a program to make sure that when we do start up, guys are ready to go or as close to ready to go, and how do we maintain, for example, our pitcher's health during the offseason? What kind of a home program do we put them on to accomplish that? There are some guys that are still in Arizona that have access to the facility under strict controls regarding how many people are allowed in at a time, cleaning between players coming in. There's no organized or group workouts, and that's just for our 40-man roster players. I think as we start to think about then the COVID-specific aspect of how do we get back to play, I think one of the things that's going to be really important is what is the testing capability at that time. As you guys know, right now, testing is somewhat limited and reserved only for people who have symptoms. That's rapidly changing with tests coming online every day and the volume of tests being manufactured increasing every day. So what would be ideal is if we get to that point, and we've already had preliminary discussions about can we do that, and can we do that keeping in mind the rational and fair use of testing. You know, do you just test everyone at the beginning when they come back into the facility? And then we could certainly get to a point where we're at least having a spring, maybe not having the fans around, quarantining the players when they leave the facility so they're not interacting with a lot of people outside. And if we have negative tests, I think that gives us some degree of confidence, at least for an abbreviated spring, that we could do it safely.
You know, I think that the new reality may be seeing sports without fans, and it would make sense if we don't, you know, have full testing. And if we do, you know, there are people that are asymptomatic, right? So we don't know, you know, the real danger here is if people are walking around with it and it somehow gets into an old folks home or there is some sort of connection to grandma or something, people that are at high risk, you know, you got to be really careful about it. So I would imagine it's going to be difficult to have sporting events in front of fans for a while.
No question. As you guys know, the process by which we went through this lockdown was graduated. You know, we started with large crowds and then all of a sudden moved down to basically everybody staying at home in Illinois and other states. And I think we'll see the same reversal, albeit much slower, as we come back online. And so, you know, although we all kind of chuckled at the fact that we'd be playing sports without fans, I think at least in the short term, that's a realistic possibility. I think that, you know, this reminds me a little bit of 9/11 in that if you remember, That happened in September. The baseball season was still ongoing. I remember the White Sox were in New York at the time that that actually happened.
Yes.
But if you just think back to the way that that people rallied around sports when they started back up, I think that it would be important to be able to have a season, even if abbreviated, just to give people something to feel good about again. And this is where you, I think, really see the power of sports in our culture and how it just brings people together and really celebrates what's great about America.
You know, Nick, one of the issues that might be secondary, but I think significant, is this whole thing about elective surgeries. And you look around baseball, and since the stoppage, you know, Chris Sale has come out, and I think there's Tommy John surgery is going to be required of him. Noah Syndergaard, the same thing. And there'll be other pitchers out there maybe facing the same reality. Are these surgeries considered elective, or are they considered necessary because they help pitchers get back to doing what they do for a living? And is there an ethical dilemma for somebody like yourself who might be told to, or you operate on pitchers for a living and you fix arms because that's how they make their living? How do you view that whole situation?
Yeah, it's a great question, guys, and you know, it certainly makes for a salacious story, and obviously the optics are not great when that happens. But I think part of the key here is understanding what is the definition of elective. And that's something that's really evolved in Chicago and around the country as we've gone through this crisis. And frankly, it may be different. For example, what's elective in New York right now is probably very different than what's elective in Springfield, where the volume of cases and the burden to the health system is much less. So the reason for postponing elective surgeries is really to eliminate, number one, patient contact or extended patient contact among multiple healthcare providers. Number two, to make sure that even though with some of these elective procedures, the chance of needing to go to the hospital is small, you don't want these patients in the hospital because we need those beds for patients who have the virus right now. And number three is we don't want to burn through supplies, things like tubes that are used for breathing during surgery, the gowns and gloves and masks and all the things that we do to do it safely. We're trying to preserve that for the front line. So when we first started, we went to elective as being basically being able to do anything that if you waited would change the outcome for the patient. So I'll give you an example. If you tear a tendon and I repair it tomorrow, you probably have a much better chance of success than if you tear a tendon and I repair it 6 weeks from now. So that would be considered a non-elective procedure, even though you know, it's done as an outpatient, you go home the same day, you know, it's not going to kill you if you don't do it. So that was the initial definition. And within that, we started to think about, well, what about people who are impacted financially? So obviously, a baseball player, people think about differently, but imagine a laborer who tears his rotator cuff and can't lift his arm and is unable to work until that gets fixed. Is it really fair to ask them to wait 3 months and potentially impact their livelihood long term because they have a worse outcome than if you fixed it right away? So that was the definition when we started. As we evolved in this crisis, and certainly in New York and right now in Chicago, we've really gotten to the point where we're saying elective is only if it threatens your life or your limb. Which means that, for example, elective cancer operations, somebody who has a breast tumor or a colon cancer, are not getting their surgery at the moment. I think that will change as we get further along in a better sense of the disease here. But that's different in different parts of the country. And so I think that you have to think about the baseball player the same way you would think about the electrician and whether it's going to impact them financially, and then think about your region of the country and where it is safe and reasonable to do that without compromising your healthcare system.
You know, this is a silly question given everything you're talking about here, but I can't help but wonder. The NFL draft will take place in 3 weeks, and there are a lot of players that you would have questions about medically. Now, most of them have been to the combine. They have a thing called the combine recheck where they'll bring guys in and just try to see if they are advancing, if the injury is healing to a point where a team feels comfortable taking them. How would you handle some sort of a remote type of situation where you wanted to look at a guy's knee, or you wanted to look at something, you can't get an X-ray? Is there any way of telling a team, of telling a group of people whether or not they should draft a guy? Is this one of the complications you just can't avoid?
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an impact, guys, based on the way that football does this. As you know, they did go through their combine, so they had some information. But, for example, independent team workouts or independent evaluations are not happening. I'll tell you, in baseball, we don't have anything like the combine. So all of the things we do to evaluate players and player health and risk are done just by looking at medical records and they're asking for a review of imaging studies. So we do that in baseball already. Football's a little bit of a different beast because of the complexity of the injuries and some of the long-term ramifications. So it's a bit different than baseball, but I think it's going to have an effect. So if you look at a guy like Tua, who's projected to go, you know, somewhere in the top five, certainly the top 10, that's going to be a hard one for teams without being able to bring him in for a workout to really put them through the paces individually, which would be the norm for anybody picking in the top 10 who would be considering him as a player. So I think it really may change the dynamics of the draft in some way.
Before we let you go and really appreciate your time, do you have any just parting advice for people looking at this as a casual sports fan or just anybody who might be listening that is always a good reminder from your point of view?
I think, you know, whether you're a sports fan or not, I think the reminder is, although it doesn't feel like it, and I think as we get farther into this stay-at-home order, it becomes very hard to see individually why we're doing this and how we're making a difference. But I can tell you it's so important for us right now to all band together and do our best to decrease the spread of this thing, because the better we all are working together, the shorter this is going to be and the quicker we get back to things like sports and regular life. So stay home, stay healthy is the parting words, and I think that's the party line throughout the medical community right now.
Dr. Verma, thanks a ton. Really appreciate the insights.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Take care.
That's Dr. Nick Verma, orthopedic sports surgeon, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush. And thanks to everybody at Rush. Thanks to everybody at every hospital in this town and all the wonderful work that people are doing. The selflessness of the medical profession really comes through. The gift that it is to be healers really comes through for a lot of people in these times, and certainly we all appreciate it.
And the stamina, Molly, just the stamina it takes physically and mentally just to get through this.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. You're listening to Molly and Haw on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.